on the first of two and a fraction. That fraction may be small, that fraction may be large. That fraction may be one, I don't know. Then it's not a fraction. Fine. But we're gonna have two or three shiurim on the topic of, as you see at the top of the sheet, Be'ezet Smachim. Which plants are subject to Shemitah? And I want to note that this shiur today is dedicated L'Ilui Nishmat Yosef Feivel Ben Natan for his first yard site. His neshama should have an aliyah. At first glance, you look at this question of, well, which plants are subject to Shemitah? And the answer is relatively obvious, right? This isn't one of the harder ones. I'm just going to mute people by default because I'm getting background. I can't mute people by default. I'm not the host. Whoever is the host. Thanks. At first glance, the answer is obvious. Edible food is subject to Shemitah. Shkayach, right? I brought you the pasuk, Parshas Behar. Vaisa Shabbas Haaretz Lachem Le'ochla. It will be for you to eat. So therefore, whatever is edible is subject to Shemitah. But it's not nearly that clear. And when you think back what we've discussed already this year, you know that it's not that clear. Right? First of all, when the Torah says Shabbat Haaretz, the Shabbat of the land, what is considered to be something that grows from the ground? That's a topic we've already talked about somewhat. We had our nice discussion about hydroponics, and we had a discussion about growing in a pot and growing indoors. But we have another element that we're going to need to see today, which is, what about plants that grow on the ground, but not in the ground? So that's going to be something that we discuss. And then also, what constitutes le'ochla? When you say it's for you to eat, what exactly does that include? Does that include something that you smell, right? Flowers with a fragrance, are they subject to Shemitah? Besamim, spices, are they subject to Shemitah? What about other types of benefit that consume the item? Yeah, those who've learned Bava Kama know
marijuana.
We use the term, sorry?
Marijuana.
Yeah, that didn't come to mind, but yes. There is discussion about this, you are correct. I don't know why it didn't come to mind. But we talk about in Hebrew the word biur, right, as a word for destruction. Right? The Torah uses it to refer sometimes to consuming something, like eating it. But what about, let's say, burning something? What about firewood? How does that play into this? So what I want to do is understand which plants are subject to the sanctity of Shemitah, Kedusha, Shvius, and which uses are therefore permitted for them. And what we're going to see are three requirements. Number one, it has to grow from the ground. And again, in the process of defining that. Number two, the benefit has to come when the item is consumed. And we'll talk more obviously about what that means. That's going to be the bulk of today's shiur. As well as something for which the benefit is a popular kind of benefit. Something that people normally use the item for, as we'll discuss. And then once we've learned our three points, then we'll apply them to specific cases, like the besamim, like the flowers, and Zev, yes, maybe even the marijuana. Wait and see. But our first point is, it has to grow in the ground. Like I said, we've talked about pots, we've talked about hydroponics. When we talked about avodas karka, we also talked about what if it grows in manure instead of growing in soil. But the question that I want to look at here is the question of whether it has to have roots in the ground. Take a look, please, at the Gemara in Shabbos, Taftzadi, Amud Aleph. Source base. Mishnah is in that long slog in the middle of Shabbos where you're talking about transporting things on Shabbos, and we say that you're only liable in the event that it's something that is significant. If you transport a quantity that is significant, so you're liable for transporting wood. If you transport enough wood that you'd be able to cook something. I'm not going to go into the Beit Zakala discussion. The Gemara there does. Enough spices to be able to spice something. Fine. And along the way, they mention various ingredients, which you see there. I brought you the Mishnah in brackets. Me raglayim, neser, boris, kamulia, ashleg, various detergents. These are not plant-derived detergents. So the Gemara in Source Beis says, Meiraglayim, what is Meiraglayim? Ad ben arboim yom, until 40 days. I'm not going into that. The Neser also, Boris also, actually Boris is where we'll start. The where the Gemara says, Boris, what is Boris? Amrav Yehuda Zechol, he says that's sand. To which the Gemara says, Vatanya ha Boris v'achol. I have a braisa that lists Boris and sand. So obviously Boris is not sand. Ella, my Boris. So what exactly is this thing called Boris? Kavrisa, which Rashi explains means gofris, sulfur. Okay, so sulfur is a detergent, and that's what they're talking about transporting on Shabbos. And then the Gemara asks, Meisvei, Hosifu alein hachabitzin v'aliyunin v'haboris v'ha'ohel. This, what they're quoting here is talking about Shemitah and things that would be subject or would not be subject to Shemitah. V'isalka daitach kavrisa. If, in fact, Boris is Kavrisa, is Sulfrisa Me'isa B'Shvius, why in the world would Kavrisa be subject to Shemitah? Why should sulfur be subject to Shemitah? You don't eat sulfur, it doesn't grow from the ground, it doesn't fit any of our criteria. Vatanya, Zaklau, Kol Sheishlo Iker, Yeshlo Shvius, V'She'enlo Iker, Enlo Shvius. The phrase there in the, that he quotes, this brisa is subject to multiple interpretations as we're going to see. But right now I'm going to translate that as anything that has a root is subject to Shemitah. If it doesn't have a root, it's not subject to Shemitah. Elamai Boris, so what is Boris? And they go on to say it's aloe and so forth. The point though is that brisa that they quoted at the end, it has to have an Iker in order for it to be subject to Shemitah. And if you look in Source Gimel, the Meiri brings you multiple explanations of what this line is referring to. The one that's important for us is specifically the second one that he brings and the third one that he brings, which is that an Iker is a Shoresh, an Iker is a root. His first approach is that Iker means a fruit, not our discussion right now. He also connects it to the laws of beer, which is our next topic after this series, but that's also not our topic right now. But the point is, anything that has a root is subject to Shemitah, and therefore, if you look at the bottom of the Meiri in Source Gimel, in where he brings what I bracketed as Gimel, V'yesh Mefarshim, Kol sheyesh lo karka, kol davar shapri gadel min hashoresh. If it has a fruit that grows from a root, kigon rov peros, o kulam sheyesh lem ikar, like most or all produce that has a root, umakom ba'ilan shegadel mimenu, a point on the tree from which they grow, ulahotzi kimeyan upitrios vikishus she'en lem shoresh shegadel mimenu. We are excluding mushrooms. Mushrooms do not have their mushrooms are not subject to Shemitah because they don't have a root. So says the Meiri. Clear? Reb Chaim Knievsky in Derech Emuna in Source Dalet notes that the Ritva read this Gemara differently. He read it like the first approach in the Meiri, which is that what we're talking about here is not about whether something is subject to the laws of Shemitah or not. It's actually about whether something is subject to Biur, which again, Rav Sami is going to talk about, but essentially is the law of either that you have to destroy the produce when it stops being available out in the field, or that you have to make it hefker when it stops being available out in the field. So that's what that Gemara is actually talking about, according to the Ritva. Nonetheless, Rav Chaim Knievsky in the Derech Emunah, if you see Source Dalet, the second paragraph, says still, Mistaber shekmoshe p'turimi meiser, dot dot dot, b'mnei she'en giduleya min ha'aretz, hachanami en shaykh bo kidusha shvius. He says, just like Truman Meiser aren't going to apply to it, so too, the laws of Shemitah are not going to apply to the mushroom. Got it? Clear? It needs to have roots. So here I decided to deviate a little bit just because it's too interesting a topic to simply skip, but mushrooms do have roots. What do you mean mushrooms don't have roots? You don't see the roots. However, the mushroom, it's not as though you can grow a mushroom on literally any surface. They do draw something from the surface that they are sitting on, right? You see mushrooms growing on dead wood, because the protective membranes on the wood have broken down, and therefore there's a possibility for the mushroom to be able to draw nutrition from it, the mushroom is not going to grow on a metal pole. The mushroom is drawing something from inside. See, here I brought you sources Hay and Vav. Hay is just a line in the Rambam in which the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Shmita v'Yovel, Asavim v'Yirakos Sha'alu Me'elehen ve'elehen Zera. He talks about grasses and herbs that grow on their own and not from seed. Spontaneous generation. Right? The possibility that you have plants that grew that didn't come from a seed. So Chaim Knievsky in the Derech Emuna says, you know, I saw this Sefer HaBris, which commented that there's no such thing. If you have a plant that's growing, there was a seed. We don't have spontaneous generation of plants. And he says, yeah, I know that. He says, don't worry about that. In the middle of the second line in Source Vav, Ve'ez astira l'divrei Rabbeinu. This does not contradict the position of the Rambam. D'davar she'ein nira l'chush ha'ayin ve'ein nirgash nikra she'ein lo zera. If you can't see it, if you can't sense it, it does not have halachic existence. That's his statement. And he says, "V'gam b'kmeinu pitrios." So too, regarding these mushrooms, sha'amu b'gemara d'me'avira rabu, where the Gemara says they grow from the air, v'lo me'ara, not from the ground. Omrim ativi in b'yamenu she'esh l'nchutin dakin ma'od ba'adamash nishrashin b'hen. He says the scientists today tell us that in fact mushrooms do have these tiny tendrils that extend into the ground. And he says, "Ve'ein the sosil adivrei Chazal." That doesn't contradict the Gemara. The kevin shenu nikur zet nikra le'inyan halacha she'ino tzameach ba'adama klal. He says, since you can't see it, it doesn't exist as far as halacha is concerned. And he goes on to talk about the more famous examples. He talks about spontaneous generation in lice. He talks about what you can see in a magnifying glass. He talks about bugs in the water. He talks about bugs in the air. He talks about esrogim with defects that you can only see if you use a jeweler's loop. And he says what we accept as halacha, which is, if you can't see it, it ain't there. So I brought it more because it's an overall topic of interest to people than because you really needed it in order to understand this halacha. But the bottom line is, therefore, mushrooms are not subject to the laws of Shemitah. In Source Zion, I noted for you that Eretz Chemda, in their shiur on this topic, discusses the issue of honey. I felt like it wasn't so necessary for our discussion, so I just gave you a little list here of some of the points in Zion. The question is, if I have honey in a beehive, and I'm talking about bee honey, so it came from plants that grew during Shemitah, do I have to worry that the honey is off limits? So first of all, he brings that the beehive itself is not a problem. Again, it doesn't have a root in the ground. In Lashoresh. So that's not a problem. However, the honey came from plants, and the plants grew during Shemitah, so maybe the honey should have Kedushas Shvius. So that's where you see Dvash Atzmo, and then it goes on to the next page. He brings five different arguments, some more convincing, some less convincing, for why there's no issue. The first approach is that the honey comes from fruit, right? It's the pollen that's on the, from the flower, to be more specific. The bee, in ingesting, so to speak, the pollen from the flower, has eaten it. And therefore, it's already considered to have been eaten. And that's how it loses Kedusha Shvius. That's one approach. Second approach is to say that the pollen is taken from the flower before the fruit ever reaches chanata, before it ever reaches the ripening stage. I thought out of the five, that's the most convincing argument, that therefore it's not subject to Shemitah. A third approach was a very interesting one. Maybe the bees come from outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you could say it's Zev Zegorim. Some of the pollen was from inside Israel, some of the pollen was from outside of Israel. I think you have to get into the discussion then in the Gemara Bava Basra about if you put your mustard near somebody else's bees and how far the bees go to get to get something for honey production. Nonetheless, another argument was that the bees add certain other chemicals to it, and therefore it's not purely the pollen. And then finally, nishtana mitiv. Oh, it's different now. It's no longer what it originally was. So that was just an interesting discussion. Eretz Chemda threw it in, so I mentioned it here as well.
All that's different. The fact that they don't change it. It's really just flour.
Yeah, I mean, the whole sugya there about you know, it's not really from the bee. Right. Yeah, I mean, there are changes to it. It's still not the original pollen. It's just not, yeah, but yes, that has to figure into this calculation. It feels very much like, I know the honey is fine, the only question is how I got there. That's what that feels like. Okay, so growing in the ground, we've covered. That's it. No further discussion on this point. Ah, Rav Sammy, yes?
Just a quick question, and this isn't my expertise, obviously, but is there any, like, I guess, biological difference between the root of a mushroom and the root of a regular plant? Meaning, I just get the impression that although they, like, sort of attach themselves to the ground, is it the same process of, like, growing from the ground and absorbing nutrients from the ground that a regular plant would have?
So it's not as sophisticated, meaning a regular plant is using a xylem and a phloem, right, to draw materials up and to send materials down. You know, it's a different level of sophistication in the structure. But from a halachic perspective, all I care about is it's drawing nourishment from the ground. If I could see it, I would have a problem with it. In the same way that we talked about plants that extend over the side of the pot and they're being nourished through the air, where there's no, you know, no tendril, you know, to speak of. Okay. So the second of our issues is the one that we're going to spend the bulk of our time on today, and that is the issue of hana'aso ubiuro shava, the benefit and the destruction of the plant coming, or the destruction of the fruit coming at the same time. But in order to get to this conversation, we need to know a little bit about how you process flax. I am guilty, as I suspect the vast majority of guys who learn Gemara and Yeshiva are guilty, of not really understanding what is going on when you soak flax. Meaning, the Gemara talks about, in various circumstances, soaking flax. And Rashi is going to tell you on our Gemara that we're going to see that it's about soaking flax in wine. And I always read that and thought, oh, I guess you're dyeing the flax with the wine, right? You're trying to color it. Like, that's a good assumption, right? But then as you read our Gemara and you read the discussion about when you're getting benefit, you realize that's not what's going on. That can't be what's going on. It doesn't fit, because we specifically contrast soaking flax and dyeing materials by soaking them in a liquid. They're not the same thing. So the question becomes, what exactly is involved when you're soaking flax? What are you doing? So I'm sure Rav Chaim, you know, has already investigated this. But for the benefit of everybody else, if you take a look at Source Ches, this is from a naturally linen-producing site, New England Flax and Linen. They put a nice explanation for the process of making linen. I actually emailed them a follow-up question, but oddly, I have not heard back yet. I think their Talmud expert may be out. But I'll explain the follow-up question momentarily. Take a look at what they have to say here. Turning flax into linen is a complicated and lengthy process. Traditionally, the plant is pulled up by the roots and then dried. The seeds are then removed, a process known as rippling. The dry flax straw is then redded, and that's what we need to think about here. It's the redding process. To separate the fibers from the woody parts of the plant stalk. Water redding involves submerging the flax in water for a number of days and allowing bacteria to consume the pectins that bind the layers of the stalk together, right? If you think about what we do with grain, where you have to thresh it in order to separate things out, this is a gentler means of doing it. The bacteria are consuming the pectins, and now everything will separate. Water redding can take between 4 days to 2 weeks, depending on temperature, and results in a light-colored fiber. Dew redding or ground redding involves spreading out the dried straw on a grassy lawn or field for several weeks and allowing fungi to consume the pectins. Dew redding takes longer than water redding and results in a silver or gray colored fiber, and you can go look at that page. I gave you the link to find out all you want about making linen. But that's what you're doing. Well, that created a problem for me, because that's clearly what we're talking about in the Gemara, and you'll see as we go through the sugya, like, that makes sense. But they're doing it in water. Our Gemara is going to talk about doing it with peros shvius, right? With Shemitah produce. And Rashi is going to say, with wine specifically, why in the world would you be using wine, right, to separate fibers? Generally speaking, if I get wine on something, it makes it sticky, right? They certainly if it's like one of the sweeter wines, but in general, you're adding sugars. Why is that a good idea for redding flax? I'm not questioning that they did it. Of course they did it. But why would they have done so? So that was what I emailed to these folks at New England Flax and Linen, and oddly, they haven't answered yet. Maybe they're experimenting. I did come up with two suggestions. One, the Gemara in Brachos Chaf Beis Amud Beis talks about soaking flax as being a very smelly procedure. They talk about not davening near flax that's soaking. So maybe you would add wine enough so that you would dispel the smell, from the soaking flax. Maybe. I did find in source tests a fellow, Dr. Moshe Ra'anan, who offered a different suggestion. He doesn't think it's wine. He thinks you're actually using pieces of fruit and you're dumping them into the water. And he says, he doesn't think it's wine. First of all, he says that financially it doesn't make sense. And there's a baltashka situation. And he says it's also not going to be effective because if you're putting alcohol into the water, you're getting rid of the bacteria. Right? So his suggestion is you're taking some sweet fruit and putting them in and the bacteria can feed on the fruit. That was his thought. Honestly, once you're making his suggestion, you could even suggest that they're using grapes because grapes have bacteria that live on the grapes. There's something called the noble rot or the noble bacteria, I forget what the term is for it, that grows on the outside of grapes. And when they submerge the grape skins in red wine, it actually aids in the process of fermentation. So they could even be using using grapes for that purpose. But either way, the point is either you're adding bacteria or you're adding nutrition for the bacteria, but that is what you would have been doing in this redding process with your perishvius. Anyone else have thoughts on like how this is working? Why you would be doing this?
I believe that what's on the grape skin is actually fungus more than the bacteria.
It's a good point. It is.
I believe it's a fungus. It's like, but it is rotting. Part of grading wine is let it rot. Maybe it'll rot. Maybe whatever works on the grapes would also work on the flax material.
Right. But again, those are pre-fermentation materials. You wouldn't add wine. You would add grape skins.
You'd add developing wine. You'd have the wine mush that's being fermenting into wine, which still has the grape skins in it.
But the more it ferments, the worse this is going to be.
Or if you just direct the process for the flax, as in the opposite of what Dr. Moshe Ra'anan said.
Sorry?
As if you wanted the inverse of what Dr. Moshe Ra'anan said, you wanted to stop the process. Let's say it's sufficiently separated out and you want it to either slow down the process by killing some of the bacteria.
Maybe. Maybe. Okay? I don't know. In any case, investigation. The takeaway out of all of it is that the redding process does not dye the flax, number one. And number two, important for the discussion we're going to have, it doesn't make the flax more valuable. The flax does not come out the other end as a better product. And the reason that's going to matter is because you are destroying the Shemitah produce when you immerse the flax in it, but you're not benefiting in a tangible, quantifiable way beyond the fact that now the fibers have separated. And that's something that's going to matter as we discuss this. So we need to see a Gemara in Sukkah. If you take a look at source Yud, the Gemara here is in the middle of a discussion about Lulav, because it is Maseches Sukkah. And what we learn here is that the activities that we use Peros Shvius for must be activities in which the benefit you get from the activity is simultaneous with the destruction of the Peros Shvius, of the produce. In other words, this is something that is going to become very clear as we go through it, but I want to say it, I think, ahead of time. There are two ways we can look at the requirement of Hana'aso Ubi Uro Shave, that the benefit and the destruction happen at the same time. One way to look at it is, I have produce that has Kedushas Shvius. If I want to use it, I have to use it in a way that the benefit and the destruction happen at the same time. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, if the normal use of this product is that the benefit and the destruction happen at the same time, this item has Kedushas Shvius. And if the normal use is not like that, then the item doesn't have Kedushas Shvius at all. This will become more clear as we go through it in the Gemara, so don't panic if it's not quite clear yet. Take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara tells us that wood is excluded from Kedushas Shvius. There is no sanctity to wood, because it's not Hana'asa Ubiyuroshava. You don't benefit from the wood at the time that you destroy it. And what it's talking about is wood that you would use, right, like yesterday, Yom Ha'atzma'ut, to make coals for cooking. So you destroy the wood when you burn it and make it into charcoal, but you only benefit from the wood when you use the coals to cook afterwards. So your benefit and your destruction are not simultaneous. The destruction happens first, the benefit happens later. So take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara is talking about a case involving a lulav from year 6, which it says is not subject to Shemitah. So the Gemara says, Taima, the reason why, as I added in brackets, Shemitah does not apply to this piece of wood, this lulav specifically, Delulav bar shishis hanichnas l'shviyasu, is because it's a year 6 lulav that now is entering year 7. Hadishviyas kadosh, does that mean that a Shemitah lulav, a lulav that actually grew, a palm branch that grew in Shemitah, has Kedusha Shviyas? Am I? Why should it have Kedusha? Eitzim be'almohu, it's just wood. Ve'eitzim ein bahen mishum Kedusha Shviyas. Wood does not have the sanctity of Shemitah. Desanya, it's a braisa. If you gather grapevines, if you get grape leaves, if you gather reeds, whatever it is to store, if you're going to eat them, right, grape leaves with rice in it or something, whatever it is, then it has kedusha shvius. Licked on the eitzim, but if you gather them to use them as wood, ein by mishum kedusha shvius, there is no sanctity of shmita for them. So the Gemara says, Sha'ani Hasam, that's a different story. Da Amar Kra, Lachem Le'ochla. The Torah says that this Shemitah produce will be for you to eat. Lachem Dumyo De Le'ochla. For you, like for eating. Meaning, Misha Hana Aso Ubi Uro Shava. That you benefit and you destroy it at the same time. Like when you eat something. You benefit and you destroy it at the same time. By the way, what does that mean? What is the benefit of eating? What benefit do you get when you eat something? Sorry?
Satiation.
Satiation? Could be.
Hana.
Hana's grono. Hana's grono, the way it tastes. Right? And what's the third possibility?
Energy for
right.
Learning.
Right, nutrition. Nutrition of one kind or another. You're getting calories, you're getting your vitamins, whatever it is that you're getting. Those are your three options. Tasting, right? Let's just put it in order, right? So your three choices are tasting, being full, and getting nutrition. Right? I think that's the way to put it in order. Which benefit are we talking about here in the Gemara if we're saying that the benefit comes when you destroy it? I think it's one, right? I think it's tasting. The Gemara is defining the benefit you get from the food you eat as the enjoyment you get when you taste it, which comes up in other areas of halacha, right? We say that if a person eats, but he wraps up the food in something else, that he doesn't actually taste the food, right? He doesn't get an anas grono, so then he has avoid the problem of achila. Ah, but he's still going to get nutrition out of it. Yeah, but the hana that we are concerned with seems to be the tasting benefit. Okay. So the Gemara says that the lachem, the benefit you get from Shemitah produce, has to be like eating. Meaning that when you eat it, you destroy the thing, and you benefit at the same time. Yatz u eitzim, that excludes wood, which you're burning to make coals. Shana asanachar biyuran, the benefit of using the coals comes after you've already burned the wood. To which the Gemara says, but that's not the only thing I use wood for. V'ha'ika eitzim demashchan, what about wood that I use for light? Dahana asanu biyuran shava, so you're burning it and you're getting the light simultaneously. Amarava stam eitzim lahasaka hein omdin. Different editions have a vav there. I left the vav in parentheses because we don't read it as though it's there. The assumption is that wood is intended to be burned for coals. That's what it's there for. You create coals and you cook with it afterwards. The Gemara then says that the halacha on wood and shmita is actually a machlokes tanoim. And here we're going to get back to this business of redding the flax and other types of soaking activities. The Eitzim Lahasaka, we're in source Yud, we're on the fifth line. The Eitzim Lahasaka Tanoihi. This issue of using wood for making coals is actually a machlokes tanoim. Disanya, Brisa says, Ein mosrin pero shvius lo lemishra velo lekavusa. We don't hand over pero shvius, or we don't use pero shvius for mishra, which is the act of soaking the flax, this redding activity. Velo lekavusa, and we don't use it for laundry either. Rabbi Yossi omer mosrin. Rabbi Yossi disagrees, and he says, yes, we do. We're okay with that. My time at the Tanakama. What's the Tanakama's rationale for saying that we don't do it? Damar krali achla, because it's for eating. Velola mishra, velola kvusa. It's not for redding. It's not for laundry. It's for eating. My time of Rabbi Yossi. So why does Rabbi Yossi say I'm okay with it? Amar kralachem, because the Torah says it is supposed to be lachem, for you. Lachem lachol tzarechem, for all of your needs. Vafilu l'mishro l'kavusa, even for redding, even for laundry, you can use Shemitah produce for all of those. So therefore, it is an acceptable activity. V'tanakama haksiv lachem. Well, Tanakama, who says that soaking is no good, doesn't the Torah say lachem, it's for you, so we should expand. Hahu lachem dum yodile ochla. Yeah, but he says it is for you to use in a way that is like eating. Mi shahana aso ubiuro shava, as I underlined. That which has the benefit and the destruction happen simultaneously. Yatz umishru kvusa shana asan achar biuran, as opposed to soaking, as opposed to laundry, where the benefit follows the destruction. Rabbi Yossi haksiv le ochla. Rabbi Yossi, don't you know that the pasuk says it's for you to eat? That's different. That's to teach me that it's only for eating and not for malugma. We're going to get into the whole malugma discussion and so on later on. That's not for today. But what he draws from it is that it has to be like eating in the sense that it's a common popular benefit. You can't use it for a benefit that's not shaveh l'chol adam. That's not the same for everybody. So we're going to come back to that in Malugma, God willing, next week. But the point here, and what we get from this Gemara, is that in order for an activity to be an appropriate use of Shemitah produce, it has to be one in which hana'asu b'yiroshava, but we also get from it, simultaneously, that it only has Kedushas Shvius, if it's hana'asu u'biyiroshava. So take a look at Rashi, who says it in Source Yid Aleph, the top Rashi that I quoted there, Sha'ani Asam. Sha'ani Asam gabe atze hasaka lahachi lonoagin behen shvius. You want to know why the wood that I burn and make into coals doesn't have Shemitah status? Damar kravaisa shabbat, etc. Mashma lachem lachol tzarchechem. Uchsiv le'ochla, the part I bolded. Lememra de'ein muter lehenos mipero shvius elahana'a hadoma la'achila. You're not allowed to benefit from pero shvius other than with a benefit that is like eating. So that's where Rashi teaches me that the activity with which I use Shemitah produce has to fit this template of Hana'asu B'yuro Shava. And then he tells you in the second Rashi that I quoted for you in Yud Aleph, the end, the part that I bolded, Umehach drasha nami alfinan she'ein shviyas noeg ela b'pri ha'omei lahana'os halalu. That Shemitah only applies to a fruit that is set up for that kind of benefit, the hachinami midrash kra, because that's what you also draw from the pasuk. Vaisa shabbat haaretz no heges bamesh shalachem leochla. Shabbat haaretz will apply for that which you eat. Shana aso dome laachila, that it has a benefit that is like that of eating. That's the way that Rashi frames it. He makes a similar comment in Bava Kama Kuf Beis Amud Aleph, which mirrors much of our sugya from Sukkah. So the reason why Hana'asa Ubi'uro Shava matters, as Rashi explains, and I think it was straightforward from the language in the Gemara, is because you can only use Shemitah produce for eating style benefits. If I stop there, right, I'm good. Like, I would have been very happy had I never seen the Mishnah Rishona. The Mishnah Rishona has a different view. I don't mean that in a cosmic sense. I just meant on this point. The Mishnah Rishona has a different take on what it is that's going on here. He splits the issue of Kedusha, which produce is going to be Kadosh, from the issue of which malachos are you allowed to perform with Peros Shavias. And I brought it for you here in Source Yud Beis, and we'll see it in a second. But basically what he says is, the reason why you need Hana'asa Ubiyuro Shave in order for the plant to have Kedusha is like Rashi said and like the Gemara said, because it has to be like Achila. That's all well and good. But he throws in a different explanation for why the use has to be Hana'asa Ubiyuro Shave. Take a look at Yud Beis. He says, Mimin Hatsov In, he's dealing with the Mishnah that's going to talk about ingredients for dyeing things, for coloring things. And he says, Bigamar Maisilahu de Dumya da Achila Ninu Shana Aso Bishas Biuro. He first brings you what we already know, the use, in that case, dyeing it has to be like eating, that you benefit at the time that you destroy it. And he goes on, dot, 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 dot. But then he says, if you look at the third line in that Mishnah Rishona, Aval Asur Litnan Ledavar Shahana Asan Achar Biuran. You're not allowed to use the Peros Shavias for something where the benefit comes after you destroy it, like the barbecue. Kimo Mishro Gvusa, he brings you the case of redding, he brings you the case of using it for laundry. The Atam, Kaven she'en hana b'sh'as habiur havi kimafsid. He takes you back to Rav Sami's shiurim, and he says, if I use the Shemitah produce in such a way that I destroy it and the benefit comes only later, then my act of destroying it is actually, it's literally destructive. It's mafsid peros shvias. It's not a lack of hana'asu b'yuro shava. It's you are destroying Peros Shavias since you're not benefiting from it until later. I thought that was a very interesting approach and very different from what basically everybody else in the world seems to be saying. The only one... Yes, Rav Sami.
I just think... I agree. It's very interesting. I just think the question to ask, though, objectively is... So the Gemara says, you need Hanasa Yerosh Shabbat. But what am I violating if I don't do that?
So if I take this, if I take his view, then it's the answer is it's hefsid.
Right.
Oh, you're saying that in the end, those who say that it's about la achla will also be saying that it's hefsid? That he's the end of what they're saying?
So. I mean, at the point at which you can't benefit it from this way, I think maybe saying more than that, maybe he's saying that it's just regular hefsid since you don't benefit right away.
Right.
But I don't think it's so crazy. I mean, ultimately what we're saying is since you're doing something to it, which is not consistent with
Hilchos Shmita, that's right. Could be. I hear you. And you can do the same thing then with the Derech Amunah that I'm about to show you. If you take a look at Source Yud Gimel, this was also, he used a turn of phrase that caught my eye, on Hana'asu B'yiro Shava, in Source Yud Gimel. When we say mechabsin bohen, that you can use detergents that are Shemitah detergents for laundry, so he says, Aval asur lahasik bohen ledas rabbeinu, you would not be allowed to burn them. What happens is the Rambam says, we're going to come back to this, the Rambam says that laundry detergents that are from plants are subject to kedusha shvias. Aloe, whatever, he says, is subject to kedusha shvias. So he says, you're allowed to use them for laundry, you're not allowed to burn them, You're not allowed to destroy it. You're not allowed to engage in commerce with it because it has kedusha shvius. And then he says, "Velodami laatze hasaka she'in kedusha shvius chala alein klal." But they're not like wood you would use to make into coals, where we say there's no kedusha. The detergent has kedusha. Why? Dehasam ein hana asenu biuran shava. Because when you're dealing with wood, the hana and the biur are not simultaneous. She'in hahasaka, and this was the key. Ela hechsher hahana'a. When you burn something to make coals, the burning is only a hechsher. It makes way for the hana'a, the benefit. V'hahana'a ba'acher shehusku v'nesrafu, which happens only after the destruction. I thought his language of hechsher was intriguing. That the problem of hana'aso bi'uroshava, or lacking that, is that the act of using it is just a hechsher for later hana. I don't know if he's saying the same thing as everybody else, and I just saw the word hechsher and that grabbed me, but I thought that was interesting also. Okay. Thinking through this idea of hana'aso biyuroshava, and the Chazon Ish does this in Shvias Yud Gimel Vav, but I didn't bring it from his text. Thinking through the idea of hana'aso biyuroshava as Rashi frames it, which is that hana'aso biyuroshava is a requirement in order for the thing to have kedusha, and is also a requirement for the activity that I do with the peros. So therefore, an item that has kedusha as Shvias, because its normal use is hana'aso ubiyuro shava, right? That use of it is mutter. Other uses that are not hana'aso ubiyuro shava are prohibited, right? If I have an item that is normally eaten, I can only eat it. I can't do things with it that are not hana'aso ubiyuro shava, right? Like what we just saw in the Derech Emunah. If I have laundry detergent and that has kedusha shvius, so I can use it as laundry detergent. I'm not allowed to use it as fuel for a fire to make barbecue coals. Whereas, if an item has no kedusha, because its normal use is not hana'aso biyuroshava, right? That use then is mutter, and all uses are mutter, right? I can use wood. If you're going to tell me the normal use of wood is not hana'aso biyuroshava, the normal use is for barbecue coals, so I can use wood for whatever I want. The only way things can go wrong is if I take an item that normally is hana'aso biyuroshava and I use it for a non-hana'aso biyuroshava activity. So I want to apply that to the laundry case, right? The case where I use it for detergent. If laundry is not considered hana'aso biyuroshava, then detergents by definition have no kedusha, and therefore I can use the plants that are detergent ingredients, that's fine. If laundry is called hana'aso biyuroshava, we're going to come back to this in the Gemara as to whether laundry is or is not. I'm just trying to walk through the idea itself to get us used to this whole hana'aso biyuroshava concept. If laundry is hana'aso biyuroshava, if we say you benefit when you destroy the detergent, then detergents have kedusha, but laundering with them is fine. It's like le'ochla. The only problem comes up if laundry is not hana'asu biyuroshava, and I use holy non-detergents for laundry. Right? That's where we're going to get into trouble. Which is going to be a machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. That's exactly the machlokas in the Gemara that we saw in Source Yud. Using peroshvius. The Rabbanan will say you can't do it because you have to do hana'asu biyuroshava. And Rabbi Yossi will say you're allowed to because I don't care about hana'aso biyuroshava. Okay. Good. So far, are we clear? We got it? Okay. I up until 3 minutes before shiur, my head was in taking call on Shabbos, which hopefully you'll be there, Mickey, for the shiur on Sunday morning. I'm not sure my head is in. Got it. But if you guys got it, then that's great. Okay. So, here's our question. If you flip the sheet over to Source Yud Dalet, the Gemara in Bava Kamma is going to tell us that you are allowed to use peroshvius in order to dye clothing, in order to color clothing. It's going to bring it to us from a Mishnah in Shvias Perek Zayin. I am allowed to do that. Well, the Gemara in Sukkah told me that you're not allowed to use perishvias for laundry. You're not allowed to use perishvias for redding flax. Why should dyeing materials be any different? Take a look at source Yadala, the Gemara in Bava Kamma. Rava Rami, Rava asks, Tnan, the Mishnah in the 7th parak in Shviyah says, Mimin hatsov in, various kinds of dyeing materials. Svichei stis v'kotz, I'm not going into the specifics of what they are. Yeshla in Shviyahs, Udmei in Shviyahs, they have Shemitah status. And also if you sell them, then their money has Shemitah status. Ayin Shamr of Sami Shirim. Yeshla in beer, Udmei in beer. They're subject to beer. The money you exchange is subject to beer. Ayin Shamar Sami's next series of Shirim. Alma, Eitzim Yesh Bahen Mishum Kiddush HaShvias. So from here, it sounds like inedible wood, like the material for dyeing things, has Kiddush HaShvias. Very many, but we also learned, we saw this already in the Gemara in Sukkah, that if you have leaves that you're gathering for eating, that has Kedusha. If you gather it for wood, it does not have Kedusha. Ein ba mishum Kedusha shvias. Why is it that wood that I'm using for coloring has Kedusha? Wood that I'm going to use for laundering, or it didn't even say, it just said not eating, I'm using it as Eitzim, ein ba mishum Kedusha shvias. So I don't understand. Mishani. So the Gemara answers, Amar kra le'ochla. The text says in the Torah to eat, b'mishana aso b'yuro shavit. Sorry about that, I got bumped offline. All right, so back where we were. Why is it? I mean, this is such a cliffhanger. That's actually a really good cliffhanger there. Why is it that for dyeing that has kedusha shvias, but laundry, it doesn't work? How am I supposed to understand that? And the Gemara's answer is, well, it's all about hana'asu b'yuro shava, whether the benefit and the destruction are happening simultaneously. If it's wood for coals, it's not simultaneous. That's our answer. I don't understand how that answered the question at all. So, three different approaches. One from Rashi in Sukkah, one from Rashi in Bava Kamma, and one from Tosfos in Sukkah. Okay, we got three different ways to resolve this problem, because the Gemara did not resolve it for me at all. Rashi in Sukkah, source Tesvav. Velo lekvusa, you're not supposed to use it for laundry. Lekibus begadim, or lichbos begadim biyayin shel shvias. Laundering clothing in Shemitah wine. I put that right up there with redding the flax in wine for my list of things that usually if wine gets on my clothing, I need to put it in the laundry. Maybe that's what I should do. The next time I spill a kiddush or something, right, I should just say, no, then it's a Shabbos problem. Never mind. Now it's a Mitakein issue. But Rashi says, laundering clothing in Shemitah wine, Mishra ukvusa hana'asan achar biuran. So redding and laundering, the hana follows the consumption, follows the destruction of it, meaning the wine is ruined before you get the benefit of the finished product. Shemisha sheshora begadim o apishtin biyayin sha'achas nisbo'er va'avad lo. When you soak the flax, when you soak the clothing, the wine is shot. V'hana aso eina ad sheyilbash habegadim. The definition of hana'a is the benefit you get when you wear the garment, right? I discussed with you what the benefit of eating is. You also need to discuss what's the benefit of laundry. The benefit of laundry is when you wear the clean clothing, says Rashi. And therefore, it's after you destroyed it. That's Rashi's idea here. Is not in Bava Kamma. It's Rashi's idea in Sukkah, let's be clear. Is that when it comes to soaking, laundry, redding, it's not called hana'asu biyuro shava, because true benefit is when you wear it. The only problem with this approach, right, is what about dyeing then? Then when I color clothing, the same thing should be true. It should be hana'asu la'achar biyuro. If hana'asu la'achar biyuro, then you shouldn't be allowed to dye things with Peros Shvius. And indeed, that's what Tosfos says. Tosfos says that doesn't work at all. As you see in Source Tezai, in the part that I bolded, Vitema, he says, I'm shocked. The Ba'gozel Kama Kachashiv Min Hatzivu and Hana Asinu B'Yuran Shava. The Gemara in Bava Kama, which we just read in Source Yedalid, said that dies are Hana Asu B'Yurashava. The benefit and the destruction is the same. If the benefit you're talking about is wearing it, you're not wearing it at the time that you destroy the dies. That doesn't make any sense. So therefore, the first approach to how we define Hana is very difficult. So we take a second approach to how we define Hana, and this is from Rashi in Bava Kama. What he's going to say is that Hana means transforming your clothing. Changing your clothing so that now, you know, before it wasn't colored, now it is colored. Before it was dirty, now it's clean. That's the idea. The only difference between redding laundry and dyeing is that the processes are different in terms of when the produce is destroyed and when the item being soaked is transformed. That's the only difference between these processes. But the fundamental benefit we're talking about is the same across the board. It's when the item is transformed. So if you take a look at... Where did I bring it? Did I not bring it on the page? Rashi and Bava Kama?
What's the source? Tazayin. Quotes Rashi.
Yeah, I must have just intended to rely on that. The idea is, if you look in the middle of Tosfos there, Ulamai deboy lemeim rahasa. Tosfos in Sukkah writes regarding what Rashi says in Bava Kama. Actually, no, that's not Rashi. That's the Gemara in Bava Kama that he's referring to. It's the next line. I'm going to come back to that middle line later. Ubekuntres pire sham. Rashi in Bava Kama explained, demine tzivoyim b'sh'as resichas hayora kala hashoresh v'kolet hatzeva bebeged. Rashi in Bava Kama says, coloring the clothing is hana'aso b'yuro shava, because the benefit is when the color is absorbed in the clothing, and that's when the coloring ingredient is destroyed. So therefore, coloring is okay, as opposed to laundry, as opposed to redding, where he says your wine is ruined in the beginning. Remember, he thinks wine is being used for redding. So the wine is ruined in the beginning, but the flax is not transformed for another 3 or 4 days. So as far as this approach, Rashi and Bava Kama's approach, the idea is that the hana'a is not the hana'a of wearing the clothing. The hana'a is actually the transformation of the clothing, or the transformation of the materials, the flax that you are soaking. Okay? That works a lot better, right? His first approach we have real problems with, the wearing approach, because that should apply across the board. The idea that it's about transforming the clothing makes a lot more sense to us. We can figure that out a lot easier. Tosfos notes one other possibility that's related to this also. And that is, it's about the value of the material that's being soaked, the material that's being laundered, the material that's being colored. It's the middle line in that Tosfos. He points out that the discussion in Bava Kama begins with a completely different point. It's a Bava Kama topic. The discussion in Bava Kama is whether we say that if you dye wool, do we say that you have improved the wool just based on changing its appearance? It's the value of the clothing. Yesh shevach samanin al gabe hatzemer. There is improvement of the materials on the wool. So what Tosfos suggests is that it's the value of the clothing. And maybe the value changes differently for dyed clothing than it does for soaked clothing, for soaked flax, or than it does for laundry. Meaning, if I am doing laundry, if I am redding flax, I can understand that the value is not going to go up at the earliest possible stage. It's only going to go up at the end of the process. Right? At the end of the process is when the laundry is clean. At the end of the process is when I can take the flax and now convert it into something useful. Whereas with dyes, the wool is dyed as the produce is destroyed. The two happen simultaneously. There's no intermediate stage, is the suggestion here. And so the value of the wool really does go up along the way. I think everybody is frozen, which means that I may have a problem here. It looks like... Oh, come on. Let's do this way. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Good, because I was about to switch over to my phone. The, okay. So that's the idea here. This third approach is the hana is in the value of the clothing, and the value goes up for dyeing right away. The value does not go up for redding and for laundry right away. So the question now is, I have a machlokes Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan, right? That's our starting point here. Machlokes Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan as to whether hana'asu b'yura shava is an issue or is not an issue. According to Rabbi Yossi, it is not an issue. According to the Rabbanan, it is an issue, and it's what defines Kedusha Shvius, the Kedusha of the Peros themselves, as well as the Kedusha of the use, the particular use. So the question we have to ask is, what does the Rambam think? How does the Rambam paskin between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi? There were a few different ways to approach this. My ideal would have been to approach it from the Yerushalmi first, and show you the problems with the Yerushalmi. But in the end, I decided to go with it based on the Rambam himself. And there are two reasons to think that the Rambam does not believe in Hana'aso B'yuro Shava. Number one, the Rambam never mentions it. He never gives that as a rule. He never gives that as a criteria. Number two, he has a really startling psak regarding laundry, which could go either way. And we've already read this. We already talked about it at any rate, but let's see it inside in Source Yud Zayin. This is what the Derech Hamunah was commenting on earlier about detergent materials. Mine kivusim. Things that are intended for laundry could go in Boris va'ohel. Ohel is aloe. Boris was that discussion that we started on before about what Boris is. Kedushas shvius chala aleyen. They have kedushas shvius. Umechabsin bohen, and you can launder with them. Shnemar v'isash batzartz lachem lechol tzarcheichem, all of your needs. Who does that sound like? Rabbi Yossi, right? His standard is lachem. It's for all of your needs. He doesn't say anything about hanasa ubiroshava. Nothing at all. Aval ein mechabsin bepeiro shvius, but you're not allowed to use peiro shvius for laundering. The Einosin be Malugma, he also doesn't like the Malugma. Shinamar, as the Pasuk says, etc. etc. He does not want you to use Peros Shvius for it. That sounds like Rabbi Yossi too, right?
No, it doesn't. No. Vola Mishra Lokusa. You didn't read the last two words.
Oh, I'm sorry. I jumped. Thank you. The Velola Ki, Velola Mishra, Velola Kavusa. Correct. He's not willing to allow you to use it for redding. He's not willing to allow you to use it for laundry. Thank you. The problem that we have here is this. On the one hand, he says, Peiro Shvius, edible ingredients, may not be used. That sounds like the Rabbanan against Rabbi Yossi. Next week I'll show you the Radbaz in Source Yud Ches, who says that's supported by a Tosefta. However, on the other hand, he says inedible ingredients have kedushas shvius, right? And we use them for laundry. That sounds like Rabbi Yossi. So who exactly is the Rambam following here? How do we make sense of it? So what we'll see next week is the dominant approach that the Rambam believes in, hana'asu b'yuro shava, but there's a very creative read from Rav Isaac Herzog, Ritzch Isaac Herzog, who's going to say, no, the Rambam does not believe in this at all. It's going to hinge on a Yerushalmi, so that'll be, God willing, next week. Okay? Have a restful...